tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 18th of February 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, today I want to look at some news stories which add further evidence to some of the theories that I have put forward, particularly the idea that people that come from countries like Afghanistan and other countries that people claim to be from and requiring asylum from, they treat women in a very, very different way to the way that we treat women in Britain. And some of the people that come over from these third world countries, they have a completely different way of understanding things. And our government just ignores this. The people on the left just ignore this, and they claim that we're just racist and we're just stereotyping people. But when you actually hear what's said in the court, it shows you that they don't understand things in the same way that we understand them, and they see themselves as victims in this. This first one that we'll start off with comes from GB News. Asylum seeker who raped homeless woman with extreme violence complimented by judge for prison conduct. And again, that's another issue to the one that I'm wanting to raise. But that shows you this two-tier justice. Do you think that a white man would be complimented by a judge for their prison conduct if they'd carried out something that was extremely violent? Isman Ullah was sentenced to 15 years earlier this month. An asylum seeker who raped a homeless woman with extreme violence has been complimented by a judge for his conduct while in prison. Isman Ullah, 28, who was sentenced to 15 years in prison earlier this month for an attack in a London park. And I'll just pause there just to reference something else here. One of the things that I learned while I was in prison is that the way the authorities see these paedophiles, they see it as if they just couldn't help themselves, as if they have this mental problem, and they should really be looked upon as if they're disabled and they just can't help themselves from raping children. Whereas those of us in the general population, we've chosen to break the law because we want to break the law. So in a way, they look at the people that like myself as a worse way, as if we made an active choice to actually break the law, whereas pedophiles don't have any choice. And I'm not saying that that's all of them, but that is the way that some people right at the top of the criminal law establishment, that's the way they look at things, and they see the pedophiles as not causing so much trouble as the people in the general population. They'll all do as they're told, for instance. Whereas the people in the general population might start to play up. And another thing with these pedophiles, that they see themselves as actually being quite virtuous in other ways. There was one that was in one of the institutions that I was at. I wasn't actually at this meeting when he was there, but he was talking about how honest he was and how someone had dropped some money and he picked the money up and he took it back to them, and he made this big point of saying that. And my friend who was actually at this meeting, I mean, he brought it up to me and he said that's the way they think. They see themselves as being quite virtuous and that what they have is this mental problem that they just can't resist going out and abusing children, and that's the way that the authorities look on it. And I think that shows here, really, doesn't it? When the judge is praising this rapist's conduct for being in prison, as if what caused him to do the rape was some mental defect that he had. Ulla, who arrived in the country on a student visa from Pakistan, punched his victim to the ground and throttled her before raping her multiple times. Despite the gruesome nature of his crimes, Ulla was praised by a judge for his behaviour behind bars. Judge Fiona Barry told the sex offender, "Custody will have been difficult for you," according to The Sun on Sunday. She gave the prisoner credit for using his time in custody constructively. "English is not your first language, and you have had some difficulties with your mental health," she said. Again, I mean, he's obviously not going to be deported, is he, if he's learning how to speak English while he's in there. "It is to your credit that you are using your time in custody constructively to improve your education and that you are an enhanced prisoner. Enhanced prisoners have earned higher privileges, such as more spending money, visits, and time out of cells." During the trial, Judge Barry had described the violence used in his attack as extreme, adding that he showed no remorse for his actions. "The violence used in this attack was extreme," she said. "Your victim suffers recurring nightmares. She cannot sleep. You presented yourself as a man who could be trusted, a religious man, a man of integrity, a man concerned for her welfare who likened her to a family relative. You have not shown any remorse and continue to see yourself as the unwilling victim." And that's the important bit. He sees himself as the victim. The way that he sees this is that this woman got his passions aroused, and because he was aroused, he couldn't help himself, and he just raped her. And then afterwards, after raping her, he felt bad about raping her, and he blamed her for causing him to feel bad about raping her, so he throttled her and punched her. And I think that's the mentality that you have there, because people from places like Afghanistan, they're used to seeing women covered in burqas. They're not even used to seeing any flesh on a woman whatsoever. They come to Britain, they see what looks like naked women around them, and their passions get aroused, and they take what they see is being offered to them. The way they look at it, they would say, "Well, the woman was offering it to me. She was walking around naked. She was asking me to rape her," is effectively the way that these men understand this. And I think this comes out in these trials. That's why the judge says here, "You continue to see yourself as the unwilling victim." Because he will be saying to himself, "Well, I didn't want to rape her. I don't know why I did. I just couldn't help myself. And I'm the victim in all of this." That's the way that he will be looking at it. And that way of looking at things, that is the way that things are looked at in these Islamic countries. They, instead of over here in Britain, what we say is, we say, well, men should restrain their passions. If men get aroused by women, they get aroused by women. They should not just seek to take what is on offer. They should restrain their passions. Whereas in Islamic culture, they say, well, a man's passions are so strong, we have to avoid those passions being aroused in the first place. And the way to do that is to get the women to cover up. And then there is less chance of the man's passions being aroused. There is less chance of the man raping the woman, effectively. And that's the way that they deal with it. As I say, in Britain, we do it the opposite way around. And I'm not making a value judgment on that either, because you would have to measure the number of rapes that happen in Islamic countries and the number of rapes that happen in Britain. And I think if you look at the official figures, you will see that more rapes happen in the West than in the Islamic countries. So you could say that their way of dealing with this actually protects women more than our way of dealing with this in the West. And I brought this up with the criminal psychologist when I was actually in prison, and she said, "Ah, yes, but you don't know about the number of rapes that happen within marriage, because they don't appear in the statistics." So I have to put that point in there, because clearly they don't appear in the statistics. And again, that all goes on your view of whether during marriage, rape can actually occur. I mean, I know that in British marriages, it used to be that you used to have to, when you took your vows, you were effectively saying, I consent to having sex whenever my husband wants it. And the husband saying, well, I consent to having sex whenever my spouse wants it. So I should imagine they probably have something similar in Islamic wedding ceremonies. And they probably say, well, rape is, it's not possible that rape can actually occur within marriage. I'm not certain on that, but that may be an argument that they actually use. But I'm sure if you actually look at the statistics, there will be less rapes that go on in Islamic countries than go on in the West. And that would be their argument. They say, well, our way is superior, isn't it? Women are more protected by wearing these burqas than they are from walking around naked in the West. And as is shown here, they will see themselves as an unwilling victim of their passions. They will blame the woman for having aroused his passions. And then he will be feeling guilty about what he's done. And he will say, well, this woman caused me all this guilt. This woman aroused my passions. She caused me to rape her. I am the victim. And we see this again and again and again in these court cases. This is why I brought this particular one up today. I'm not saying this because I want people to think that all asylum seekers are rapists or all Afghanis are rapists. I'm saying this because they think about things in a different way in their culture. And it's not compatible to Western culture. And this is one of the reasons why it's not compatible, is this man would not have raped this woman if he hadn't been here and seen a half-naked woman. If he was in Afghanistan, surrounded by women with burqas, he probably wouldn't have actually raped anyone. So he sees himself as a victim here, and the woman that was actually raped, I mean, she is clearly a victim. She's been raped. And what she's a victim of is our government's immigration policy, because that's at the root of this. If it wasn't for the government's immigration policy, this man would never have been in Britain. He would not have raped that woman, and he would not now have the guilt of having raped a woman and being in jail for 15 years. That's why he sees himself as the unwilling victim. And it comes up again and again and again in these rape trials. The next one that I've got here is again from GB News, and it's headlined, Labour mayor who helped hide a son's phone after he raped a 15-year-old girl blamed mother's love. Now, this is a mayor, obviously someone who has been in Britain for some time, and she knows that her son raped this woman, and girl, and she hides the son's phone. And this reminded me of the case which we covered a few weeks back, maybe a couple of months back, in India, of this lad, probably 13, 14, and he raped and murdered a small child in India. And the mother knew about this, and she helped to cover it up. And in the court, she appealed against her own sentence, and the appeal was upheld, and her sentence was nullified, because they said that a mother's love is so strong for the son that she couldn't help herself. She just had to cover this up. And this happened in India, and I made the point at the time that this same sort of thing could now happen in the West. And here we have an example of the same thing happening in the West. Now, I think if a Western mother knew that their son had raped a woman, I don't think they would be helping them to hide the evidence. I think they would be encouraging them to hand themselves in. And the other point here is, if her loyalty to her own relative is more important than something like this, what about her loyalty to her own ethnicity? I mean, she's a mayor, and she should be governing for everyone, the same as she's a citizen, and she should be a citizen for everyone, but she isn't, and she's helped her son to cover up the fact that he raped this girl. So is she helping her own ethnicity to cover up things? If that ever came up during her workload as a mayor. A Labour mayor helped hide her son's phone after he raped a 15-year-old girl by stalling a police raid on their home to allow time to conceal the device. Nahid Eljaz, 61, blocked officers for over a minute and a half, giving 41-year-old Diwan Khan time to hide the phone believed to have stored a video of him sexually assaulting the teenager. So this isn't like it was a child, a young son, and she thought it was a misdemeanor that he had done. It was actually a grown man, a 41-year-old man, and she's covering up for him. The former town mayor for Bracknell in Berkshire was convicted of perverting the course of justice, saying she had let her mother's love cloud her judgment. Khan's trial heard that he raped the young girl after she blacked out from the MDMA administered by Khan into vodka for her to drink. So he drugged her as well. It was a mother's love that clouded her judgment. That's the exact same thing that we heard about this happening in India. And it was worse in India, as I say, because the person that carried out the rape then murdered the child that he had just raped. As we talked about in that last episode, it's this idea that the victim is actually at fault here because they put everything out on display for them. They were asking to be raped, in effect, is the mentality, as we showed in that last one. And that goes on over here, probably the same as in India. And now we have this. We have this this hiding of the phone. It was the exact same thing, I think, last time as well. It was the hiding of the phone, which had the evidence on it. The teenager woke up in the back seat of his car with no clothes on, with no memory of events that led her there. Khan later showed her the video that he filmed of him having sex with her, choking her and slapping her in the face, threatening the girl with messages saying he would show her mother the video if she reported the incident. So he's blackmailing her as well. Khan, who appeared alongside Ilyas at official functions, even sent the teen the clip and told her that he would slit her throat if she told anyone. He was convicted of raping the pupil, having already admitted perverting the course of justice in relation to hiding the device, which was never recovered. Both mother and son were found guilty following a 6-day trial at Winchester Crown Court in Hampshire. Prosecutor Ed Wiles said they had been speaking in Urdu when the police arrived on September 12, 2024, so they could discuss what to do with the phone unbeknownst to officers. And that, of course, that's another issue. When you have multiculturalism, when you have people that speak a different language to you, you don't know what they're actually saying. The police don't know what they're actually saying when they go around there to arrest them. So they could have been talking about ways that they could cover this up. Mr. Wiles said Ilyas and her son had not mentioned the word phone when they were speaking in Urdu because the word is the same and would have given it away to the police. On police body-worn cameras, her son could be saying the big bell. And Ilyas replied, "Keep silent, I know." So it was deliberately done. She hid the phone or stalled the police so that it was time for the phone to be hidden. Previously, during the trial, Mr. Wilde said, "We can't be sure that Miss Ilyas had any clear idea of the trouble he was in at the time, but a mother's love for her son will stretch some way, and in this case, it stretched into criminality." Defending Ilyas, Claire Evans said she had not opened the door to the police straight away because she'd gone to wake him up and get him to talk to the officers. Can you imagine the police doing that? They knock at the door for somebody, and the mother says, "Oh, just wait here at the door and I'll go and wake him up." And he's been accused of rape. When I was busted by the police for using old-fashioned English online, there was 13 or 14 of them. They broke the door down. The first thing I heard was a big bang. And the next minute I open up my eyes and I've got half a dozen police all in a circle around me while I'm in bed. And yet when the police went to arrest this fellow, accused of rape and strangulation and all sorts, they just calmly wait there at the door for the mother to go and get him, which, of course, gave him time to get rid of the phone. Ilyas was mayor of Bracknell Forest between 23 and 24, with Khan assisting her as mayor's consort on occasions. And I bet he thought that he was untouchable as well because his mother was the mayor. She had recently finished her year as mayor at the time of the offence in September 2024. Both Ilyas and Khan will be sentenced at a later date. So again, we have things that I showed were happening in India, and now we have the same things happening in Britain because of our government's immigration policy. And the next article we have here again shows the mentality of the people that are carrying out these rapes. This article comes from the BBC. An Afghan asylum seeker has been found guilty of abducting and raping a 12-year-old girl in Nuneaton. Ahmad Mullakil, 23, took the girl to a quiet cul-de-sac on 22nd of July and carried out extremely horrific sexual offences. At Warwick Crown Court, he was found guilty of rape, abduction, sexual assault, and taking an indecent video of the girl. Note that that took place at Warwick Crown Court. That's the same Crown Court where that poor lady that worked at the migrant hotel, she was stabbed 24 times with a screwdriver on a train platform. And that trial took place at Warwick Crown Court as well. So these attacks are happening in Warwickshire, and these attacks are being carried out by alleged asylum seekers. And of course, this is where Patriotic Alternative protested, was at Warwick. And you had the left wing there chanting about how refugees are welcome there. Just after two of these refugees, one had murdered a young lady and another had raped a 12-year-old. I really don't understand how the left can hope to get any support in places like that when things like this are going on in the courthouse. Co-defendant Mohammed Kabir, 24, also an Afghan asylum seeker, was found not guilty of strangulation, attempted child abduction, and attempting to commit a sexual offence. So why wasn't he found guilty as well then? Possibly because they lacked evidence rather than he didn't actually do it. Because what we do learn about these things is that there's often more than one perpetrator. It's not like when a Westerner carries out a rape, he knows that if any male nearby was to hear this or see this, that he would be attacked by the Western male. When something like this happens and the attacker is Afghan or Pakistani, what seems to be the case is that there will be other males of the same ethnicity that will also join in. We see that with the rape gangs, with the grooming gangs. And again, this shows you this different way that women are looked at in these cultures and the different ways that rape is looked at in these cultures as well. Jurors at the 10-day trial heard evidence from the victim who said Mullakil laughed while attacking her. The case prompted changes to guidance on reporting the nationality and immigration status of people arrested and charged. There were widespread protests in Nuneaton because those details about the men were not reported by the authorities when they were arrested. So this is why people protest, because they can see that there's a cover-up. They know that the person that carried out the attack was a refugee staying at the refugee hotel, and the mainstream media is not saying that. And when people go out and protest against this, the left wing turn up and say, oh, people are just being racist and these are just stereotypes. Well, Mullakil arrived in a small boat from France in March 2025, 4 months before he raped the girl. Listening to the jury deliver its verdicts in court, he could be seen crying in the dock and blowing his nose with a tissue. The girl would not have been raped. The 12-year-old girl would not have been raped if it wasn't for the government's immigration policy. And this Afghan would not have carried out the rape if it wasn't for our British government's immigration policy. Remanding Mullakil in custody to be sentenced next month, Judge Christina Montgomery KC said he will plainly receive a substantial custodial sentence, which will automatically make him liable for deportation at its conclusion. But he won't be deported, will he? Because the human rights laws say that you're not allowed to deport someone to a country where their life may be at threat. You're not allowed to deport someone to a country where they may come to harm. And if somebody has been found guilty of rape in Afghanistan, it's the death sentence. So he won't be deported at all. The court heard Mullakil had made an immigration application linked to problems he had experienced in Afghanistan. The arrests of the men prompted Reform UK leader Nigel Farage and Warwickshire County Council leader George Finch to claim there had been a cover-up of details about the attack. And that's excellent that the leader of the local county council was pointing that out as well. Farage later called on police forces across the United Kingdom to share the status of charged suspects. At the time, Warwickshire police said once someone was charged with an offence, the force followed national guidance that did not include sharing ethnicity or immigration status. Days later, police were encouraged to consider disclosing the ethnicity and nationality of suspects charged in high-profile cases. So there has now been guidance saying that they should consider this. Really, we need it put into law that they do tell us this. It's absolutely important, especially if you've got a disproportionate number of rapes and sexual assaults that are being carried out by one particular ethnic minority group, because then people can know that they need to avoid that my ethnic minority group if they want to avoid an increased chance of being raped. The jury was told that in the hours before the attack, Mullakeel, who admitted one count of rape before the trial, was hanging around the town. Again, he's an illegal asylum seeker, broken into the country, and is allowed to just loiter around the town, leching at the girls, the young girls, that to him look as if they're walking around naked because they're not wearing burqas. The victim told the trial she was approached in a park by both defendants after playing on the swings. Clearly a child playing on the swings. During the sex attack, the girl said she told Mullakeel to stop. Asked by police what he was saying, the girl responded, "Nothing. He was just laughing. I was saying, get off me. He didn't say anything. He just carried on." I'm sure he was laughing. He thought, what a foolish white girl this is. She's walking around naked and she's just offering it to me and I've taken it. How foolish of her. And he's just laughing at that. That's the way that they think. It's wrong to think that way. But if you're in Afghanistan and you see naked women around, then I should imagine it's just accepted that the naked woman is asking for a man. She is wanting a man to rape her, effectively. That's the way that it's seen. That's why women wear burqas over there, so that the men do not get their passions aroused. The way they look at it over there is that, as I pointed out earlier in the podcast, it's very difficult for a man to control his passions. So to avoid the passions being aroused and to avoid women being raped, their women wear the burqa. Whereas over here in Britain, we say that a man should control his passions. If a man gets aroused, he should not act on them. He should have self-control. That's the essential difference. And the problem then is, if you invite people over that are used to not having to control their passions because their passions are never aroused because women are always wearing the burqa, and you then drop them in the West where women are walking around effectively naked without a burqa on, then there's going to be a much heightened risk that these Afghan males who are not used to having to control their passions are going to get aroused and they're going to just take what they see as being offered to them. Mullakeel told police he believed the girl was 19 and that she had initiated what was his first sexual encounter. So again, just like that first instance there, he sees himself as the victim. She initiated it because she aroused his passions in some way by not wearing a burqa, I would suggest. And it's his first sexual encounter. So maybe he even came to the West looking for sexual encounters because Western women are perceived to be easy because they walk around naked all the time. Prosecutor Daniel Oscroft described Mullakeel's attempts to blame his victim as stomach-churning and pretty revolting. It is revolting and it is stomach-churning, but you cannot get away from the fact that that is the way that things are looked at in those countries, and our government are still importing them into our country. And when people say and talk about this, we get accused of stereotyping them all as rapists. We're not saying that they're all rapists. We're just saying that they have never been in a situation where they have had to control their sexual arousal before, for a start, because they've never been sexually aroused because all the women around them wearing burqas. During his closing speech to the jury, the prosecutor said there was no hint in the evidence he gave of any pause for reflection or to consider that in retrospect he made a mistake. He is blaming her. Exactly the same as in that first case. How many trials do we have of Afghan rapists where they blame the victim before we start to understand that they're blaming the victim because in their culture, the victim would be to blame for sexually arousing him? And that's not something you can change if somebody's been brought up all their life like that. All that you can do to prevent these sorts of things from happening is to prevent them from coming to our country. The women in Afghanistan don't get raped because they're wearing burqas. If you didn't have Afghans in Britain, British women wouldn't get raped by them. We'd probably still have a problem with our own rapists that are white, but it would be a much, much smaller problem than it is with multiculturalism. As I say, it's pretty much every day you hear about an asylum seeker raping a white woman or a white child. Most of the time, it's a white child. The judge continued, he has tried to argue that he believed she was an adult, that he initially didn't want anything to do with it, that she drove all of it, and that she consented throughout. And he believes that. He will believe that she initiated this by going out there without wearing a burqa, and that she consented to it because she was there. She wasn't accompanied by a man. She clearly consented to it because she wasn't being protected. She hadn't thought to protect herself. That's the way that these things are looked at. That's the way that he will be thinking about this. And nobody provides that analysis. Nobody points that out. And yet our government knows that. Our government has dealt with Afghanistan for centuries and that part of the world. We had the British Empire. We knew all about these countries. We knew all about the way that things were done in those countries. And yet we have ignored all that information, ignored all of it. And we just invite these people over into our country where they then go out and rape our children and murder our women. And the people that are responsible for that are the government. They're the ones who set up this immigration policy. They're the ones that facilitate this. Again, I'm not saying that all refugees or all Afghans are rapists, but there is a much higher chance if you're a child that you'll be raped if you bump into an Afghan than you will be raped if you bump into a white man. Practically zero chance that a child would be raped by a white man that saw them playing on the swings. I mean, it's just not something that we ever hear about, is it? But we do regularly hear about it with asylum seekers and particularly from Afghans. It's our government that is at fault for this. And they're at fault because they know full well that this is the sort of thing that will happen. And yet they still facilitate it because they don't want to be accused of being racist. And as I pointed out on Monday, I think the only person that will actually deal with this is Rupert Lowe. So we should all get behind Rupert Lowe's Restore Britain party if we want to try to do something about this and stop these horrific things from happening. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.